Well, come with me to the reading which we had, Genesis chapter 40. We're going to be thinking about Joseph. Now, if you know the story of Joseph, you know he's grown up in the mother of all dysfunctional families. And he's his father's favorite. And, of course, the mistake that Dad makes is to show that he's his favorite. Jacob gives to Joseph a coat of many colors. Joseph, the chosen one. If that wasn't enough to arouse the jealousy of Joseph's older brothers, he also appears to be God's chosen. If you remember, there were those two strange dreams in which the family bow before Joseph. Joseph the dreamer, destined for greatness. Well, Joseph's brothers are jealous, and jealousy leads to hatred, and hatred leads to thoughts of murder. And to cut a long story short, Joseph's brothers sell him as a slave, and they return home to Jacob with the lie that Joseph has been killed by a wild animal. So Joseph is taken to Egypt, where he's sold to Potiphar, a high-ranking officer. But the Lord is with this 17-year-old slave, and in time he rises to become overseer in Potiphar's house. It's not exactly Downton Abbey, but Joseph becomes the trusted butler. So chapter 39, verse 5, and so it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the fields. And now this strong, handsome, gifted young man catches the attention of Potiphar's wife. And every day she tries to seduce him. And every day Joseph says no. Until one day she thinks she's got him. Chapter 39, verse 11. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside. So she's made her plans. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. She makes sin look attractive. So Joseph doesn't linger for a moment. He runs for his life, his spiritual life. And of course, humiliated, she now accuses Joseph of attempted rape, and he's wrongfully imprisoned. Bad things happen to people who do the right thing. Then Joseph's master, chapter 39, verse 20, took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. Now, how old is Joseph? We don't know. He's 17 when he's sold as a slave. He'll get out of the prison and he'll be promoted to Pharaoh's deputy when he's 30. So obviously there's 13 years there. Quite how long he was the overseer in Potiphar's house, we don't know. So maybe by the time he's put into prison, maybe he's in his mid-20s. So to all appearances, the chosen one is going to spend the best years of his life, maybe the rest of his life, rotting in an Egyptian dungeon. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison, whatever they did there. It was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Which brings us now to chapter 40. Now, when you look at chapter 40, it has a deliberate structure. There's a lovely architecture, a beautiful symmetry. So if you imagine, chapter 40 is written on this sheet of paper. And we've got verse 1 at the top of the sheet of paper, and verse 23 at the bottom. Now, if I fold the piece of paper in half. So this is feeling like a children's program, isn't it? If I fold the piece of paper in half, the two halves of the chapter mirror each other. So I fold it in half. So now verse 1 is next to verse 23. They're mirroring each other. And the two halves of the chapter, they complement each other. So verses 1 to 4, that's the ones at the top, they mirror verse 23. In verses 1 to 4, we meet the butler and the baker. In verse 23, the butler forgets Joseph. It's as though they never met. We've been down the page. Verses 5 to 8 corresponds to verses 20 to 22. Verses 5 to 8, two dreams, what do they mean? And then verses 20 to 22, the two dreams and how they're fulfilled. Moving down the page, verses 9 to 13 corresponds to verses 16 and 19. Because in verses 9 to 13, we have the butler's dream and Joseph's explanation. And then in verses 16 to 19, we have the baker's dream and Joseph's explanation. So they mirror each other all the way down. Like we folded a piece of paper. Which, of course, then brings us to the fold in the page. The line across the middle. The middle of the chapter. So what's the centre of the chapter? What's the focus of the chapter? What's the message of the chapter? Where are these two strands pointing? Because actually what's in the middle is the key to what's going on. And what's in the middle is verses 14 and 15. So what do they say? He's given the butler's, interpreted the butler's dream, and then Joseph says, but remember me when it's well with you, and please show kindness to me, make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. And also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. So verses 14 and 15 are right in the middle. They're the key. They unlock the chapter for us. So what is the key to the chapter? Well, it's Joseph's request, isn't it? Get me out. In other words, this chapter is the preparation for Joseph's release from prison and his elevation to greatness. What's going on in this chapter is a stepping stone. It's the key to Joseph's future usefulness. He's got to go through chapter 40 if ever he is to be great in the kingdom. It's here in chapter 40 that Joseph's dreams and God's purposes are clearly being threaded together and they're ripening. That's why the chapter's arranged like that. The writer hasn't just sort of thrown it together. He's arranged it. You get a lot of it in Hebrew. It's what Hebrew parallelism is called. We have things paralleling each other to focus your mind on what's at the centre. And what's at the centre of this chapter is Joseph's release. Because the day is going to come, of course, when the butler will remember Joseph. And Joseph's sent for to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. Remember these strange dreams of the seven fat cows that are eaten up by the seven thin cows and the seven plump heads of grain which are eaten up by seven thin heads of grain. And as Joseph stands before the great king, Pharaoh, he gives the interpretation. There's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And on that day, Pharaoh, recognizing the extraordinary wisdom that is in this young man, he promotes him to the top of the tree. He becomes second only to Pharaoh in the kingdom. And Joseph is charged with the responsibility to prepare Egypt for the coming famine. And Joseph ends up not only saving Egypt from famine and also all the surrounding area, but also he saves his own family with all the implications that has for redemption story. Because, of course, it's from the family of Jacob that the family of Israel, that the children of Israel are going to come and Messiah is going to come and all that flows on. So when we come to chapter 40, verses 14 to 15, that's where the writer to this chapter wants us to focus. The words are, get me out. So this chapter is all about God preparing Joseph for his release and for his elevation. God's plan is right on course. However bad things appear, God hasn't lost the plot. He knows what he's doing. So what's going on in chapter 40? Why is it so key in Joseph's promotion? Why is it so key to him becoming the man that God would have him to be? Well, chapter 40 is God's school of suffering. Through the misery of a dark, depressing, desperate dungeon, some translations have it, they call it a pit. The misery of a pit, God is preparing Joseph for the most fruitful years of his life. The Joseph who leaves that prison at the age of 30 is a very different Joseph to the one who entered that prison. God has transformed him through suffering. So chapter 40 is God's school of suffering. So what is Joseph learning? Why the cross before the crown? Well, he's learning four things. So let's have a look at them. Please have chapter 40 open in front of you. Number one, he's learning diligence. Joseph is a man upon whom you can rely. Now, how do we know that? Because into his care, the keeper of the prison entrusts two VIP prisoners. Verse 1, it came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in the custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them. And he served them. So they were in custody for a while. So the captain of the prison, the captain of the guard, he needs someone he can rely on. He needs a man who won't neglect or forget his responsibilities. A man who's not going to cut corners. Very simply, he needs a man who's going to be able to get up on time. And a man who won't collude with them. These are very important people. So you don't want someone who's sort of colluding with them. A man in whose care he can safely leave them so that the man in charge thinks, I've got no worries, things are fine, Joseph's in charge. This man is Joseph. Because remember, if Joseph messes up, it won't be Joseph's neck that's on the block, it'll be the captain of the guard. But Joseph's his man. Now think about that. Joseph's been falsely accused. He's been abandoned by all, his own family. His brothers have sold him into slavery. He's now thrown into a prison. Who's ever going to see in prison? I'm being left here to rot. And yet for all that, in that desperate situation, Joseph is diligent. He's a man you can trust. He's a man you can rely on. Now, is diligence such a big deal? Says the Apostle Paul, you will never lead without it. God thinks it's a big deal. Romans 12, verse 8, he who leads with diligence. If a man is going to lead, he must have diligence. And Joseph in this school is learning diligence. God's school of suffering. What else is he learning? Number two, compassion. Look at verse 5. Then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, it keeps emphasizing, these are the king's servants, these are important people, had a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with his own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, saying, why do you look so sad today? Now, Joseph's words are like a little shaft of light, aren't they, in the darkness. It doesn't say, well, what have you got to be miserable about? You wait till you've been here for years. No, it's lovely, isn't it? He says, why do you look so sad today? He, first of all, he notices. And then it's a gentle question, isn't it? It's a gentle question. And it's a question which opens the door to their hearts, because they then say, we have each had a dream. Joseph is not feeling sorry for himself. He's not going around thinking, look, I've been entitled to better treatment. I was promised greatness, and now here I am in this dungeon. He's not going around scowling and grumpy and miserable and complaining. As he comes in and finds them, there's no trace of self-pity. There's no hint of bitterness. Not a word about himself. Just a kind, compassionate concern. Is it such a big deal to be self-forgetting? Well, God thinks it's a big deal. God's school of suffering. And what else is he learning? He's learning to be a witness. When you look at Joseph, where is his life pointing? Look at verse 8. They said to him, "We've each had a dream, and there's no interpreter of it." So Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please." Now, Joseph could have easily manipulated the situation. After all, who's to see? Who's to know? He could have said, "I'm your man. I have a gift. I'm the one who can help you." But when they look at Joseph, Joseph is pointing somewhere else. He's pointing to God. Do not interpretations belong to God? And even as he interprets the dreams, he is a faithful witness. Look at what he says to the butler. Verse 12, and he said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days, and within 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place, and you'll be put, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler." He doesn't adorn the explanation, does he? He doesn't ingratiate himself. God gives the interpretation. He is simply being faithful to God. He simply tells the truth, and then he humbly says, "Please don't forget me. I too am innocent. Remember me when it's well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house, for indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon." And look at what he says to the baker. Verse 16, when the chief baker saw the interpretation was good, he said to Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and there were 3 white baskets on my head, and the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head." Perhaps for the first time the baker thinks to himself, there's light at the end of the tunnel. The butler's going to be released. Maybe I'm going to be released. But of course the interpretation of his dream is that he's going to be executed. So what will Joseph say? I think everyone likes to be the bearer of good news. Interpreting the butler's dream is straightforward, isn't it? It's good news. You're going to get out of this place. And there's Joseph. He's face to face with the baker. He can see the light in the man's eyes. The man's got hope. So what's Joseph going to say? When the chief baker saw the interpretation, it was good. Oh, we all like to bring good news. What would Joseph say? What would you say? Joseph could fob him off. After all, it's not going to make any difference, is it? 3 days is 3 days. He's going to get killed. But what has Joseph said? Do not interpretations belong to God? My business is to be faithful to God. Consequences are God's. Mine is to be faithful to him. So to God he will give the glory. If interpretations belong to God, then I must interpret this exactly as it is. And he's faithful. He tells it straight. He's a faithful witness. It's a painful thing. Verse 19, within 3 days Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you. That's said by a compassionate man. Painful thing to say. Is it such a big deal to point to the Lord, to be faithful to him? Particularly when the Lord has dealt with you such a bad hand. Particularly when there's nobody to see. Huh? No one's going to see what's going on in that little interview in that prison cell. You can say anything, can't you? It's not going to make any difference, because in 3 days' time, the man's going to be dead. It's no big deal. You can say what you like, no one's going to know. But God thinks it's a big deal. God's school of suffering. What else is he learning? Well, finally, number 4, he's learning endurance. Hebrews 11, that great chapter of faith, it talks about Moses, and this is what it says. I need to turn to it, but Hebrews 11, verse 27. By faith, Moses forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. It's talking about Moses, but endurance is the language of faith. Joseph endured. I mean, why the diligence when you've been abandoned? Why the compassion in a harsh, cruel dungeon? Why the witness when who's ever going to see and who's ever going to know? Why? But you see, for Joseph, the God he cannot see is more real to him than the dungeon that he can see. For he endured as seeing him who is invisible. More real to the world he's looking at with these eyes is the unseen world. And of course, the dreams spell that out. Many years ago, Joseph had two dreams. They were God-given dreams. God-given dreams of greatness. And here he is languishing in a pit. He's at the bottom of the food chain. So how do we know that Joseph endures? Because if this man has stopped looking to the Lord, the last thing he'd say, verse 8, is, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" He'd say, "Oh, I had some dreams once. And you know, I believe them. I had some dreams and I thought they were important. And I believed I was destined for greatness. I believed what God had promised to me. Until obeying him, I've ended up in this place." Some God he is. I might as well have given him to Potiphar's wife. The godly life has just brought me nothing but trouble and suffering. My God, he gave me some dreams, but I think my God's lost the plot. He doesn't even know what he's doing. Look, baker, butler, take it from me. This is the real world where dreams don't come true. But what does he say? Do not interpretations belong to God? He still believes in the God who gives dreams and in the God who gives their interpretation. He still believes that what God says he will do. That God hasn't lost the plot. That's why he says, verse 14, "Remember me when it is well with you." He has no doubt the butler's going to get out. That dream is going to come true. This is clearly a man who is still looking to God. He believes that there's still unfinished business between God and him. That in spite of every appearance, God has not abandoned him. God is still with him. He believes in the darkness what God has promised in the light. He endures as seeing him who is invisible. God's school of suffering. Now, have you seen the film The Karate Kid? There's no reason why you should have. I've only seen bits of it. The original was from the 80s, and there was a remake recently. Here's the story, for those who don't know. There's a kid called Daniel, and he moves city, he moves home, he moves school, and at school he's picked on, he's beaten up. There's always some bullies, isn't there, going to duff you over. And his new setting situation, it feels like a prison. So, he gets beaten up. What does he do? Well, he decides to learn karate. That's Karate Kid. To defend himself. And there's an elderly Japanese handyman who offers to teach him. So Daniel turns up for the first lesson, all excited. Going to learn how to do karate. Only to be told to wax all the cars in the car park. Now, what sort of lesson is that? It's followed by equally dead-end, no-point lessons. He's got to sandpaper the floor. He's got to fix the fence. He's even got to paint his karate teacher's house. But each time, with these chores, these meaningless, repetitious, pointless chores, he's to use a specific hand action. Well, in this karate school, it's not long before Daniel's had enough. Because after all, what are all these mindless chores? What have they got to do with karate? He says, I'm learning nothing. I'm learning absolutely nothing. I quit. But actually, he's been learning a great deal. Because those meaningless chores, what have they been doing? They've been developing is muscle strength. And those meaningless repetitions with a particular hand action, they're training his muscle memory. So when his karate teacher pretends to attack Daniel, he finds he has all the moves to defend himself. Unwittingly, he's been learning karate. The pain, the repetition, the time-wasting chores have actually been training him to fight. They're exactly the moves that he needs. In fact, the whole experience in this karate school has transformed him. He's gone into it and come out the other side a different Daniel. Everything looks different. Now, Christian friends, do you see the point? Joseph is in God's school. He's being trained. He's being trained for his master's service. But the training is not what Joseph might have expected. I mean, those early days, those dreams, dreams of greatness. You think of Daniel turning up for his first lesson, all excited. Well, Joseph, dreams of greatness. He's really keen to tell his family, isn't he? I'm destined for greatness. The excitement of all those dreams. But that early excitement gives way to what? Humiliation. Suffering. A dungeon. But it's here in God's school of suffering where there is repetition, chores, pain, frustration, heartbreak. It's here in the school of suffering that God is making him strong. And that God is training his muscle memory, diligence, compassion, witness, endurance. Again, diligence, compassion, witness, endurance. Again. And God makes him do it again and again and again, day after day, month after month. Months become years. Until one day, it all comes together. And he's ready. Do you remember this chapter is about Joseph's graduation from God's school? Get me out. Well, this is how you're going to get out. Do you see? These four qualities have been raised to the required standard in God's school of suffering. And so to the diligent man, two VIP prisoners are entrusted. And the man who has learnt compassion, who doesn't think about himself, he's the man who asks the question that opens hearts. And the man who in the darkness is a faithful witness, he points them to God. And because he endures, he still believes in the God who gives dreams and gives their interpretation and that those dreams will be fulfilled. You see, that day, that interview in the prison cell, all the training comes together. And now Joseph's qualified. He's ready to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, to be the ruler in Egypt, to be the savior of his people. Now, of course, it's going to be another 2 years before he graduates. But you see the point. The man who is diligent in small things, he just gets up on time. You can trust him with anything. Sweeping the floor, he'll do it. He can be trusted. The man who can be trusted with small things, God can entrust him with great things. The man who shows compassion in a brutal prison where it doesn't make any difference and nobody sees, he's the man who's going to have compassion on a nation. And the man who points you to the Lord in the darkness of a dungeon is going to be faithful to God when he's on the stage and everyone's looking. And the man who endures will be just the man to glorify God, to save the children of Israel, and to bring the kingdom of God a step further. nearer. God's school of suffering has transformed Joseph. It's a transformational school of suffering. That's what suffering is supposed to do. It's supposed to transform Joseph. Those desperate years were not wasted. God hadn't lost the plot. His purposes were ripening all the time. The cross before the crown. So it's time to close. Christian friend, what of you? Maybe it's all gone wrong. When you were first converted, the excitement of those days, you had wonderful answers to prayer, the love of God's people, you're growing in your love and knowledge of the Lord Jesus, and oh, there were just new opportunities to serve and opportunities to witness. The excitement of those first days, but things have changed. Do you wonder if God has lost the plot? Maybe you're thinking to yourself, what am I supposed to be learning? Look, why can't just God give me a piece of paper and it's written down what I'm supposed to learn? He just hands it to me and says, there you are, that is what you're supposed to learn. Why can't I just read it? And the answer is because you can't learn it like that. Psalm 105, don't worry about turning to it, but Psalm 105, we're told something about Joseph. It's looking back to that time. It says this, he sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in irons. Literally, they put iron into his soul. Isn't that interesting? So they put his feet in fetters. They put his feet in irons, but actually when he was suffering his feet in irons, it was putting iron into his soul. He couldn't just read about it, he had to go through it. The pain, the suffering, was doing something to him. It was transforming him. It was putting iron into his soul. It goes on, until the time that his word came to pass. The word of the Lord tested him. So there was a limit for the suffering. There was a limit for the testing. But the testing, the training, the transformation, it took place in a prison. So Christian friend, don't be surprised if God has put you in a prison. Not four walls and iron fetters. But it still hurts, doesn't it? And the cry of your heart is, Lord, get me out of here. Prisons come in all shapes and sizes, don't they? Might be your health. Families can be a prison, particularly when they're heartbreaking. Uncertainty, loneliness, misunderstanding, relationships, job. Oh, I've got to go to the prison tomorrow. I don't want to be there. I want to get out of there. But I've got to go. A something, a someone, and it's a prison. And you see, it's hard, isn't it? And it's painful. And it's repetitious. And like our karate kid, it's seemingly pointless. Again. 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 And you're thinking, what am I doing this for? What am I learning? This is a waste of time. And maybe you feel like saying, I quit. But the Lord is putting iron into your soul. He's strengthening your spiritual muscle. He's training your spiritual muscle memory. And in his school of suffering, he is transforming you. After all, Christian friend, you've prayed, haven't you, again and again, Lord, use me. Well, this is how he's preparing you for usefulness. And maybe, Christian friend, he's teaching you diligence. Because he wants you to lead. And you're never going to lead as you are now. You've got to learn diligence. Maybe he's teaching you to be self-forgetting and compassionate. Because there are others who need you. He teaches you to be a faithful witness because you have to learn it's not about me. It's about him. It's not my story and God's the biggest actor in my story. It's his story and I've just got a walk-on part. And he's teaching you to endure. So even in the darkness, when you can't see and it makes no sense, even in the darkness you trust and obey. And he's teaching you to endure so you don't throw it all away. So that you will get to heaven. Christian friend, God has not lost the plot. This is not plan B. God's plans for Joseph are far bigger than ever Joseph envisaged. And Christian friend, one day, God will make you like Jesus. Angels will look in your face and they will fall back when they see the beauty and majesty of Jesus Christ shining out from you. Jesus says that you will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of your Father. The most beautiful, the most majestic, the most wonderful, the Son himself. God's plans for you are to make you like his Son. Big plans. But the route map to that day runs through suffering. God's transformational school of suffering. So don't quit. Nothing's gone wrong. Every day, simply do what God has given you to do. Do those chores, those seemingly meaningless, time-wasting chores. Do them again and again and again and again. And each time you're trusting, obeying. Rosaria Butterfield was a lesbian academic who got saved. And when the Lord started putting her life right, it all made wonderful sense. And she got engaged to the man who was instrumental in her conversion, a man who was training for the pastorate. And when she got engaged, all her Christian friends were thrilled. But with her plans well advanced, this man turned around and said, "It's off. I'm not ready. I can't marry you. I'm probably not even a Christian." And she felt betrayed. Just when it was all going so well, when it was all working out, God trashed it and threw her into a dungeon. She said, "Who is this Jesus? Who needs a fickle God?" And of course her gay friend said, "Oh, there you go. Betrayed by God, betrayed by your church." God's school of suffering. But suffering that transforms. So what did she do? Well, she was shaken to her core and heartbroken. But she looked to God. She endured. And step by step, day by day, she walked with Jesus. She just did what he'd given her to do that day. That day, she trusted and obeyed. That day, she did what God had put into her hands to serve him. And you see, through that daily repetition of trust and obedience, what did God do? He put iron into her soul. And he was developing and growing and training her spiritual muscle. Because his plans for her were much bigger than ever she thought. She said, "God took him away for my good. God knew better than I did. The man to whom I'd said yes would have been my ruin. Never again will I think of knowing God's will as anything but the most humbling of acts." Christian friends, God is bigger and wiser than you think. After all, he's the master, and you're the kid. and his plans are more loving than ever you know. And that's why he's transforming you in his school of suffering. Let's pray.